Ladies and gentlemen, I am pretty serious when I say that I had saved the best for the last. And why do I say that? Transportation still remains one of the biggest challenges in our industry. It's certainly a big cost element, certainly a big contributor to sustainability issues. And when I look at the panel that we have put together, I couldn't have found a more outstanding executives in the industry. It's your turn to really ask them questions that will change your companies, your business, your careers. And to moderate that is a good young friend of mine, Kumar Ayyari. Where are you, Kumar? From Salem. May I turn it over to you?
Thank you. Well, good evening, everyone. Thanks for spending all day with us. I personally, it's my first time here, and I've had a fabulous day of learning. And I know we have one last panel conversation for the day before you break for happy hour and, you know, party with Devendra. That should be motivation to kind of, you know, stay with us during the session. What I'd ask of you is, this is something that, you know, in case you have questions along the way, I would like for this to be interactive as much as possible, right? We do want to, you know, walk away with things that we can implement in our businesses. And the focus that the panel here will be bringing, fantastic set of people with great experience. What we want to do is essentially provide you a perspective of how transportation and logistics, which is usually, in my view and experience, has been more of an afterthought in terms of how, you know, material product can be delivered to customers. And then, you know, the logistics teams and corporations, I myself have been part of one, where you get involved more at the point in time when it's like, hey, I need to get this to my customer. How soon can I get it? What are my options, right? Versus being more, you know, part of a strategy where transportation itself can be a differentiator. And the last few years, we've seen a lot of that, right? We've seen where transportation itself, based on customers' preferences, where you don't go to the product comes to you, right? I'm talking about just sitting at home and getting stuff delivered, right? From a consumer perspective, that's what we're getting used to. And what I would want to essentially have the panel kind of talk through is, what has that done enable, you know, change in the way that transportation is thought of, not just from visibility and execution, but also in terms of hard cost savings. And then one of the things that's been a theme throughout the day has been, how do we incorporate sustainability into this? And the view that, you know, I've challenged the panelists, we kind of huddled a little before this, is to understand what immediate things that we can take away that we can have implemented in our business to see kind of, you know, value changes that we make. Not look at it from a 5-year, 10-year roadmap perspective, but what are those things that can help drive immediate value that can then, you know, kind of build, help build muscle, saying this is a capability that we also have. And it's not just a cost center, but logistics is a service enabler. And we'll look at it. I'll have the panel kind of introduce themselves. And the one thing that I'll ask as you kind of introduce yourself is to talk about one problem that you've been actively been solving. And that can kind of set the tone for us to take this conversation forward. John, you go.
Yeah, so I'm John Hoyt from DW Morgan. I've been in this business for a long time. I'm never supposed to say how many years anymore. And I'm responsible for sales, ops, and IT in my company. But one of the big problems that I'm working on these days is with control towers. And what I've noticed is all companies are, we talked about journeys earlier, and they're all at different parts of their digital journey. And what I've found is that the first thing that they need to start asking is what problem do they want to solve? I think when they've understood that, then it's, is it one of the 20% that gives you 80% of the benefit? So that's kind of where we start with on this. And control towers are something that can involve both technology and people. And they allow things to start right away. I think when you get in a technology project, it's something that can be, you know, multi-year. So what we see it as a bridge to whatever your aspiration is. So that's what we've been doing, is working in that space. And I think what a lot of our customers are finding is that when they start looking at solving, you know, problem one at a time, it's not about huge data sets and huge things that they need to do. They need to start looking at what can I solve today? So that's kind of what we've been working on, is that not getting too complicated and letting people start to solve it and then incorporating technology at that point. So that's what we've been doing.
Thank you. Jeff.
Thanks. Afternoon. I'm Jeff Tucker, CEO of Tucker Company Worldwide. We're the oldest privately held freight brokerage in the United States. I'm third generation. What I've come to notice about our industry is, as digitization has been the phrase, and you know, especially out here in Silicon Valley kind of area, democratization of the data. A lot of us were expecting. Just that, right? The freight industry would become digitized, and I was associating digitization with commoditization. Mm-hmm. And what is interesting is that the trucking industry has expanded dramatically over the last decade plus. We have more than two times the number of active for-hire motor carriers. The average size of motor carrier nationally has decreased over that period of time. So, and what I'm seeing is that we're a freight brokerage specializing in high value goods, pharmaceuticals, vaccines, other healthcare that's maybe not RX. We also move superloads, that's a whole other story. Very large, high, wide, heavy, long. But back to the pharma and healthcare. Customers are increasingly specific in their needs. So instead of our industry becoming commoditized, or at least in the truckload industry, we are creating shipper-specific, customer-specific SOCs. And those differ from customer to customer. And we could have customers competing in the same exact space, on the same exact pharmaceutical shelves or CVS shelves, with products that are, you know, just very similar, and maybe even using the same transportation management system or ERP, and they're running their businesses differently. So it's fascinating for us, for me to say, hey, there's one problem we're trying to solve. That's not the case. We're trying to solve a variety of problems because it's so customer specific. However, one of the themes that we've seen since the pandemic has cooled down and supply chains have normalized, and is almost every RFP talks about sustainability. And you know, you heard Andrew Boyle from Boyle Transportation and the ATA talk about the technology that is and or isn't available. And I'm here to talk a little bit more about that, but also, you know, anytime I come to these meetings, I'm always looking about what can I, you know, where I need to be, but what can I institute now? So I'll be talking a little bit about what we can institute now from a sustainability perspective.
Thanks, Jeff. Robert.
Hi, my name is Robert Stratford. I'm a key account executive. I'm responsible for selling what we have at United Airlines is our Quick Pack and Lifeguard product. So when you talk about challenges that we face on a regular and on a daily basis, it's basically keeping up with what you guys are producing and keeping up with the industry as far as the technology and some of the ULDs and all those things that you guys bring to the table for us. So basically, our challenges stem from changing our SOPs to actually meet the stringent requirements that you guys have and that you guys present to us on a regular basis. So one of the things that we've started to do is we're changing and improving our warehouses and making them so that we are able to you know, house the temp control units that are being brought and flown into our warehouses. So a lot of things that we try and work with and try and work with the customers on, it's tough because these things are changing on a daily basis. But yeah, that's pretty much how things are going with the United. I'm sorry about that.
Hi, everyone. My name is Allison Crawley. I am the Global Sustainability Manager for Sunoco ThermoSafe. For those who aren't familiar with ThermoSafe, we are a leading provider of bulk and parcel passive temperature assurance packaging. And my role and the problems that I'm starting to tackle include taking the guesswork out of sustainability, really diving into the data through life cycle assessments and various other carbon footprinting methodologies to ensure that we are designing products that help our customers meet their carbon footprint goals, and really just trying to move the needle together and progressing in ESG and various other reporting structures.
Thank you, Allison. Hi, everyone. My name is Marco Quiroz. I'm with SkyCell, been with the company 3 years. I've been in the pharmaceutical supply chain logistics space for like 25 years, so it's been a long time. And for those who do not know who SkyCell is, we manufacture and lease hybrid temperature control containers to move air freight pallets of vaccines and medication around the world. I'm based out of Miami, Florida. Our headquarters are in Switzerland, and we do have a container on our floor, on our booth, so if you're more than welcome to learn a little bit more, we'll be happy to entertain that. Jeff brought up something that was important. I've been taking notes of what everyone's been saying, but you mentioned not only you're solving one problem, but a bunch of problems, right? And so that brings me to what are we doing, you know, from a SkyCell perspective. We're trying to address a lot of the problems, which are chain of custody, temperature control prevention, visibility, traceability, sustainability, right? All those are things that everyone's interested in a different scale. Like you were saying, same companies competing in the same space, same trade lanes and others, but each one of them has different pain points. They have different situations, and they're coming to all of us as providers, suppliers, for different requirements and different things. So, the question is, we mentioned it, Kumar, in one of our calls, was with all this digitalization, there's a huge amount of data out there. Everyone's providing data. Everyone's giving data. All customers are asking for data. But what are they doing as a shipper with all that data, right? And are they really using it to make decisions? Are they really seeing all that data or just nice to have? A lot of times it's just, we're dumping reports and data, and really, is it being used or looked at? So that's also one of the challenges that we see in the industry.
Thanks, folks. That was awesome. So what I do want to kind of get a sense of, I do want this conversation to be in three parts, right? One is, let's talk about cold chain has been a theme that's prevalent all day. From your perspective, what specific solutions, you know, from a trucking perspective, from air freight, which if I think about it is the fastest mode of transportation, but, you know, be it at customs or, you know, there's places where freight can dwell. And also there's containerization improvements and, you know, innovation that's available. But I want to get a sense of the entire ecosystem as from a capability perspective, right? Where do each of you kind of bridge the enable cold chain, you know, from an end-to-end transaction And where do you see value that you can add? Data is one, but in terms of just maybe trucking, refrigerated trucking, or you mentioned warehouses. I want to get a sense of kind of the entire ecosystem of what's available. That be it a startup organization or a more mature organization can tap into versus build out their own capability, right? Jeff, you want to go in terms of what do you see as innovation that trucking companies and freight forwarders have kind of pioneered in this space that we should be aware of?
Sure. I think from a freight transportation perspective, provider perspective, on the one hand, we're agnostic, I suppose. We move a lot of temp control. And some of the product is not protected. So in that case, we're using the best carriers in the country, right? That specialize in that type of that type of trailer, and they've got outstanding technology, right? And they have trailer mapping and. But oftentimes we're moving product that is temperature controlled by a SkyCell, by a Sunoco, by an AeroSafe, right? By any variety of the providers that protect. It could be blanket wrapped. So in that case, it's a little bit. We're still we never take our eye off the game, but it's quite a different situation. I think the common theme, the commonality is we've got to control that freight. All of the we've never owned a truck in 63 years of doing business. Right, but we move a lot of freight, and we've never lost a shipment, ever lost a shipment. So a lot of it is technology, a lot of it is behavior modification among, and a lot of it is also carrier selection. But what we're able to do that very few companies can do today, and even the carriers can do, is we're able to take 50, 80, 100, or 200 carriers' data. Bring it all into our system, synthesize it. If you're logging into our system, you're seeing the breadcrumbs on the shipment. And for us, it's not only the breadcrumbs that you're seeing, but the capabilities that we have with some of our partners are to measure that temperature, also to measure diversions, right, from the route, or excursions from the temperature. So I think bringing that together is no easy task. And even the, I think that's enough for now. Yeah.
So from an airline perspective, I would say our job is pretty easy. Because you as a pharmaceutical company, you guys are actually preparing the shipment for travel, right? It's packaged, it's got its intercoolers, it's set to go. Jeff shows up at our dock and he brings a trailer and he's got the Envirotainer or a SkyCell on the back of it. Our job is simple. We've got one responsibility and one responsibility only, and that's to get it from point A to point B, right? But in between that time, there's dwell time in between that where the product is actually sitting in our warehouse, or it's sitting in our warehouse waiting for customs clearance or something like that during the time, during a period where, you guys aren't able to get those shipments. So our responsibility is to keep that shipment in the same condition that you've actually given it to us. So we're doing things like we just opened up a new temp control warehouse in Chicago that is state-of-the-art. It allows us to have a ball mat system where we can actually move containers from one place to another without doing damages to these expensive SkyCell containers that we have in our warehouses. We have a mapping system that keeps monitors those temp control rooms so that we know what the temperatures are in those rooms at all times during the day. We even have a data system that we're working with and keypads that we're working with that our agents are able to log in data and give you real-time data on what those temp control units are doing when they're in our hands. So basically, we're going the extra mile to make sure, or taking the extra steps to make sure that the shipment departs on time when possible, because this is an airline, right? It departs on time and it gets to the destination in the same condition in which you've given it to us, so.
What I've heard from you, and I'll come to the packaging side specifically right after, I do have a question for John, as I'm hearing, you know, data seems to be the underlying theme. You know, there's so many data points. We've heard, you know, things in the morning about, you know, from Joydeep as well as from the gentleman from IBM, that there is an abundance of data. 10 years ago, it used to be difficult. Where's my truck used to be the most asked question in any logistics, you know, kind of room. But the planner said, they'd have to look up multitude of systems to pinpoint where anything is at and then act on that. Today, all that data is available, but what then helps, you know, is there an over, you know, abundance of data now, and now there's analysis paralysis. What would you advise kind of customers, what have you seen customers kind of draw value out of that in terms of, hey, I have all these data points available. I know exactly at any given point of time where my trailer is at. What does that get me? Right? Is that enabling me to function and kind of do my job effectively and work off exceptions? I want to get your perspective on how these data points from multitude partners kind of are brought into one place, and what makes a company effective in using that data?
Well, you don't need all of it. That's number one. You know, 90% of the shipments are going to go as expected. So as we heard earlier, you know, 3,000 shipments a day, we were hearing numbers like that, 1 million shipments a year. It's a lot of data. So typically there are systems or technologies available that would allow you to aggregate that, and would essentially, as I call it, mow the lawn. It's looking and tracking it for you. So you're really only interested in the exceptions. So the data is great for going back and doing analysis, like in Dwell and things of that nature. But the real problems are what's going wrong. So in our business, you know, we have technology and people that are really focused on identifying what's going wrong. Let the systems, you know, do their job, but when things are off, then that's what you're focused on, and then you're trying to fix them proactively and, you know, react at that point, right? And then you have the data on what goes wrong, on what to improve. So I think you can get a lot of paralysis analysis, and you don't have to overinvest, because there's many points along the path that are being reported on a very consistent basis. So that's my kind of view on it.
Marco, I want to come to you now specifically. And I know, you know, containerization has been big in terms of, you know, kind of a twofold objective that it's meeting in terms of, you know, there's sustainability goals that it helps you meet. At the same time, it helps kind of maintain the integrity of the product. Mm-hmm. And so inherently, as we transport global companies and transportation, there's a lot of touch points.
Correct.
Right? So what's your view exactly, you know, on how, you know, some of these improvements that you're seeing in packaging have maybe, you know, added value by removing some of those touch points? I want to hear some more on this one.
So if we can reduce human intervention, that's going to help all the processes and the products to really come and fulfill their goal, right, of whatever they're designed for. So a lot of times, the more intervention there is, we're prone for mistakes and issues. In the case from packaging, and the industry has changed dramatically, it's sourcing the right materials. There's a lot of new raw materials that could be used that are going to be more sustainable, lighter in weight, and they'll keep their thermal capacity even better. That's the case of SkyCell, where our unit is one of the lightest in weight, very sustainable. So those are things, but also adding, besides the raw materials and all that, is the engineering, the manufacturing, the technology behind it, being able to integrate those things into that solution, right? And then the IoT, have the platform to give that visibility. like John was saying, you know, pretty much 90, 95% of the time, all shipments go well.
Yeah.
So the problem is when they don't go as planned, right? So, you know, one thing that we pride with the SkyCell units is we've never had any temperature deviation since the existence of our company. And for us, quality, the technology behind it, the materials we use on our containers is a priority. A lot of times our containers get to destination with plenty of energy to do even a round trip, might have 80, 85% energy left in the container. Someone might say, hey, I'm gonna throw a pallet in there, I'm gonna return it from Asia back to Europe or the Americas. We will not allow that. And of course, pharmaceutical companies will not do it because of quality standards, but we will never do it. We have to take that container back to our service center. We clean it, we inspect it, we make sure everything's operating, and it's completely recharged eventually for a new shipment. So, you know, just reducing a lot of that human intervention. We have a lot of human intervention. You have the manufacturing site. You have the distribution center where they're moving those pallets, they're wrapping them up, they're packaging. Then Tucker shows up with their truckers and they load them on the truck. It goes to the airport. You have the airline, the ground handler, they put it on a plane, they ship it, you have another trucker. So if we can reduce a lot of that, we're in using technology and the right packaging and materials, it will help out. To keep the integrity of the product.
What struck me in that was you're obviously removing a lot of human touch points and thereby also introducing longevity of the same packaging material.
Yep.
And you're putting into flow a loop of these things that can keep that new track, right? Which to me is so companies by themselves need not invest in packaging it. They focus on, hey, here's what I do best, which is R&D, mm-hmm. manufacturing, and here's where I can connect to an ecosystem of providers, so to speak, that will help me kind of get this moving, mm-hmm. right? With the ability to track, not just track where it is at a pallet level, right? But also be able to maximize kind of the return,
yeah.
right, back. So it's not just getting it to the customer, but also being able to reuse that, mm-hmm. which I think is a fascinating development, right? But the follow-up question I had, maybe, and that will help kind of the audience as well, is at what stage in the product life cycle do they start to consider, right, packaging needs? To me, today, it's probably done much later in the game. Where do you see kind of your getting involved in helping spec out some, in the product development lifecycle itself, that here's capabilities that you could think about that you can use? Is there anybody, maybe yourself or Allison?
Or Allison. Well, if you want, I'll take it first. A lot of times it will depend on what the product is, the value of the product, and the protocols that quality has determined for that product, stability and other things. And they'll factor in then the packaging needed, transportation modes, and others, right? So I think it's there. A lot of times decisions are made on the run, whatever they already have validated, because in our case, in our space, validation of packaging can take from 6 months to 24 months or more. Right? It's also expensive. It's resource intensive. You have the quality folks, you have the thermal engineering team involved, and they go through the validation until they qualify it. So a lot of times they have a new product, they need to launch it, send it to the market. What do we have available? Mm-hmm. Right? And so if we can come in early in those stages, then it would help out. Right? And now in our case, we're pallet container, but you guys also are in the pallet, but also more on the, as well as in the parcel environment.
Yeah, I would echo what Marco says. I mean, there's status quo, and then there's what would be more efficient. If we all talk at the beginning of the product design process, it helps with the qualification. It also helps with sustainability. We can integrate data as we're building that package and say, do we actually need this material? Can we switch it to something else? Can this be right-sized or lightweighted in some way? And when people hear sustainability, they automatically think of environmental, but it's people, planet, profit. It's all three of those pillars in order to say something is sustainable. And also it's about having those conversations, partnering, seeing how we're all moving the needle together, rather than, you know, at the end of a project and then firefighting, to use the F-bomb again. We really want to make sure that we are working towards the solution as the product is being developed.
I just had a comment.
Go for it.
Yeah, so it's interesting on the when you look at containers and temperature control, it kind of reminds me almost like a full truckload. You know, you own that and it's kind of operating as expected, right? Like you said, you've never lost anything and everything goes well with you. But I think the biggest change, Robert, is in the airlines. Because I remember when I was doing freight forwarding, the forwarder would be following up every step with the airlines.
Right.
But in the last several years, the airlines have made this a product.
Yeah.
So I think that's been the biggest change.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear more. And that's where there's more efficiency for the shippers because
right.
they don't have to, when they don't have enough, they don't have to buy a container.
Yeah.
Right?
So, and from an airline perspective, we have a product. It's called Temp Control, where we are actually... We have a team that's set up at a contact center that's responsible for making the reservation for the shipment, tracking the shipment, alerting the customers of the different temperature readings and so forth and so on. But it's funny because with what you guys produce in terms of small packaging and things like that, those are easy for us to carry, right? When SkyCell comes along and they invent this beautiful container that can house so many different types of medication and keep at certain temperatures and things like that, it's an 8 to 6 month process for you to get that thing manufactured and built and go through an approval process. That's the same process for us as well as an airline, because now we've got to vet that that container as well. So we've got local authorities that we have to deal with as far as getting approvals on that. Our engineers have to approve it, all the way down to the aircraft manufacturer himself, whether it be Boeing or Airbus. Those guys have to approve that this container is okay and acceptable and safe to travel on our aircraft. So it's a process, but we get through it, and it brings a lot of excitement to us that we're able to actually, you know, aid in healthcare. So yeah.
Kind of following up on this, Jeff, I want to come back to the conversation that we were having about, want to talk about carbon footprint. That's another aspect of, okay, we spoke about containerization, all the improvements that have been made there, availability of data and abundance, visibility, all of that is good, but how do we weave, how are truckers essentially looking at helping with a carbon footprint reduction? You know, there's, you know, we have options with offsetting CO2, but more so on what are active steps that you're seeing freight companies take that kind of not just kind of achieve two things. One is a cost perspective, but also help them along their sustainability kind of journey, which is not a one and done thing, but it's a constant thing that you have to keep at, right?
Yeah. So. The Andrew Boyle, again, if you were in his presentation today, spent a lot of time toward the end talking about the technology that's available and or that's not available. Last year at this time at the BSMA, we had one of the manufacturers of trucks with us, and their data showed by the end of 2025, we might have collectively, not just Tesla trucks, but collectively, we might have 55,000, electric trucks for long haul. 55,000. We have 3.5 million tractors right now for long haul, and you saw some of the data. You know, so Andrew's point is valid in that the technology right now for longer haul trucking is just not there. It's coming. And I think here we are, we talk about, you know, the other, earlier we were talking about the human genome, right? This group of companies has figured all that out, and we're messing with DNA. So I have no doubt that we'll figure this out. From the type of technology that we need to use, we probably don't have it yet in trucking. We're probably discovering. Andrew also pointed out that the amount of CO2 has been reduced dramatically over the last 15, 20 years. But I'm going to share with you the a piece of data. The average truckload in the United States goes around 600 miles, 580. It's been coming down, about 600. So 600 miles with only 40,000 pounds payload. Usually these trucks can handle 45, but I use 40,000. That one truckload throws off 2.2 metric tons of carbon dioxide. Let that sink in for a second, right? So if we can reduce 10% by going, and what we're doing is, just as Andrew pointed out, you think about, there are SmartWay carriers, and these SmartWay carriers have invested. They've invested technology, they've invested in cleaner trucks, right? They're one to three years, right? Andrew pointed out, you know, maybe you should be thinking about, are the fleets that you're using cleaner, newer, right? That's one. Two, are the truckers part of SmartWay? We've been a SmartWay partner for 14 years and no one has cared ever. Really? Except for the last year, right? So I'm glad I did it. I was always glad I did it. But you know, for 14 years, no one's cared. Now they're starting to care. So SmartWay. So if you think about it, well, where's the technology going to come? It's probably going to come among those SmartWay carriers. So that's step number two. Step number three is understand your CO2 footprint, right? So we're scope three. Anything that we would be providing would be freight transportation to you or whomever. That's a scope three emission. So what we're doing today is we're developing tools to give our customers a per transaction, per quarter, per month, per week, whatever the case is, data on how much emissions. Now, we're going to start with averages because in order to get exact, we've got to get down to the tractor using, you know, dozen carriers, two dozen, three dozen carriers. It gets more complicated. So we start with what we have, and then we build it a little bit deeper. But what Andrew did not point out, and that's something that I've been pondering for quite some time, is the offset. So we began cooperating with a partner in Brazil that is reforesting the Amazon. And for 1 hectare of Amazon, which is like 2.4 acres for us Americans, 1 hectare captures about 400 metric tons of carbon dioxide, which is around 185 loads of 40,000 pound, 600 mile shipments. So we're calculating that it's about 9 cents a mile, or about, you know, 4.5 to 5%, depends on the, of the total freight bill. Average to offset 100% of the CO2. So you think about the levers that you have to pull. Today, you might have to pull on that lever a little more, right? Because I don't think a lot of my customers are saying, hey, we're going to wait until 2050. Most of these pharma companies are far more aggressive. So we feel like we've got to have every, and the industry has to have every tool in the toolbox, mm-hmm. every lever to pull. And maybe that reforestation lever is being pulled a little more today than it will be as these technologies gain momentum.
Also, just to add to that, now I can't say that we have as many aircrafts as you guys have trailers, but we've invested and actually plan to be purchase the largest aircraft. We have the largest aircraft purchases this year that we've invested in. The majority of those aircrafts that we are investing in are able to be fit to use what's known as SAF, and it's sustainable aircraft fuel. That's an undertaking that we are to show. That's one of the things that we want to show that we're serious about. You know, investing in our future and investing in the environment. And we also invite people to join this program, our Eco Skies Alliance program, which is geared specifically towards sustainability. I mean, we're doing it below the wing, and we're doing it above the wing as well. Even inside our interiors, our blankets nowadays are actually made of recycled plastic, and we're moving and trying to find a way to get away with the plastic blue cups that you see on board the aircrafts. We're trying to find a substitute for that as well. So it's those things. By partnering with us with our SAF program, I'll add that we can actually give you per airway bill data that will show your carbon footprint as well. So it's all those things that we're looking into and investing in for the future when it comes to sustainability.
Yeah, just one thing also that we've been working on is that when we look at data, mm-hmm. we look at lanes, and most RFQs are lane driven. And by design, you're actually breaking the freight up. So what we've seen on a lot of air freight RFQs is if you could go to gateways and develop air ground solutions, you could start to consolidate a lot of those lanes and then cut some of the air transportation and go to ground. The other thing is you could take advantage of backhauls. You could really look at that in the data. And utilization of trucks is really important as well. So I think those things will make a big difference on the sustainability numbers.
So talking about backhaul, so I don't want to bring Allison and Mark your perspective. I know we touched on it, but I'm curious, and you know, we always think of the forward supply chain for most cases, right, and how to get product to the customer. How do you, you know, kind of, where do you help customers and kind of put those back in loop, and what avenues are available to send containers back, right? Now, we're talking about, you know, maybe getting product in from you know, multiple countries across the world. And again, is the, you know, it might be in the most you know, expedited way, or it could be, you know, on other modes of transportation. Where are some of the savings that we can see in terms of firstly getting containers back, mm-hmm. and you know the ownership aspect of it? Are then shippers or manufacturers responsible for kind of keeping track of where, you know, how many, you know, containers are in the loop, or what kind of, you know, capabilities do you folks kind of help customers in that aspect?
Yeah, I would say when you think about returnable or reusable solutions, they have to be thought of as a service rather than just a parcel now, because if that returnable or reusable solution has to be more durable, it may have stronger materials, maybe more environmental impact at the upfront. So we talk about like a break-even analysis between single use and return. You also have to make sure that those are being returned, either through penalties or incentives to return that package so that it is a sustainable alternative to a single-use option. So our Orion program and Pegasus are where we really work with the customers to understand if a return is possible, because sometimes it's not. And a return has to be easy and simple and not disrupt any part of the process getting the parcel to the patient, because if any of that happens, they're just not going to return it, and it's going to stay, it's going to be disposed of. So it really is about educating, partnering, collaborating, and understanding where you can get those high return rates, and co-locating with distribution centers for rental stations as well.
In the case of SkyCell, sustainability has been part of our DNA. One of our co-founders was a professor of sustainability for over 10 years in universities in Switzerland. So when it was our containers are designed, they were always thinking about sustainability as part of that DNA. And so we, besides having the platform where we show the sustainability, the CO2 savings, one thing that we're doing right now is integrating also the carriers. Right, airline, what kind of aircraft is going to be used on that lane? Is it a 747, is it a 777, 400, 800, what kind of engines it has, so that we can capture that, so that goes along to what you're saying, and I want to see if we can talk about that being part of your program.
That's
and
right.
Enjoying somewhere, somehow. But also what we said is a lot of times we suffer with the reverse logistics. Our containers are reusable, and we can use them more than 10,000 times. So there's destinations where we cannot just drop it off and then it's going to be filled with other customer products and flying it back. So we need to do that reverse logistics. Flying those is expensive, and we're having a huge impact in terms of sustainability. So one thing that we're doing as part of our strategy is that reverse logistics, do it by ocean. Okay, now what's the challenge there? We need a lot of equipment to keep on our flows that keep on flying in order to afford a 30, 45 day, 60 day transit time by ocean to get them back to Europe or Americas or wherever they're needed, right? So one thing that we've been doing right now, we're ramping up production, and now we're gonna duplicate our manufacturing. Our manufacturing is done in Switzerland, it's all automatic robots, but our output right now is 220 containers. And we're gonna do that going up almost to 450 containers a month. And that is to offset that and bring containers by ocean as much as we can.
So. Appreciate the insight. I know we're almost about, we've got 3 minutes left checking in the app, but anyone have any questions for the panel? I know this was kind of a pretty engaging discussion in terms of optionality that's available to manufacturers. One thing I think of is, hey, do what you're doing. You know, you're serving, you know, the community, but there's a connected system of partners that you can make use of in order to scale and kind of achieve global distribution capabilities. With that, any questions from the audience that we can have to the panel?
Quick question on return solutions for reusable packaging. Are there any like digital NAG, the client services that help, not just incentivization, but like reminders and things, push notifications, et cetera, that are working effectively?